Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. For the next 3 weeks, it will be Pesach, Pesach, Pesach. And this week we will be discussing people who have issues with obsessive compulsing, cleaning, shiurim, bugs in their lettuce, maror. You know, Pesach has a lot of halachas. People get really, really anxious about it. The great Rav, Reb David Cohn, a guy in Reb David Cohn, said he gets flooded with calls. How do I check my lettuce? Ladies who are scraping the walls, they get crazy with anxiety disorder. So we thought we would speak about a little bit OCD and Pesach, and we have four fantastic guests. We have Hagoyin HaRav David Cohn, the Pesach of America. We have Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Schwartz. He's both a Rav in Elizabeth, and he's a musmach of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. Additionally, he's also a psychologist whose specialty is anxiety disorders and OCD. We have from Yerushalayim, we have Rav Asher Weiss, and we have Meshulam Epstein, a noted expert who's devoted his career to halacha and OCD. So this should be really a very exciting show. And I'd like to just share with you a very amusing anecdote as well as a halacha. You know, a Rav in Flatbush shared with me a number of years ago the following story. He comes from a great Yekisha family, and he's distantly related to Henry Kissinger. He was at a family event, and Dr. Kissinger was there. So Dr. Kissinger, as we all know, grew up religious, and then, you know, became somewhat irreligious, married, out of the faith. And he went over to Dr. Kissinger and he said, Henry, you know, I'd like to invite you to the Seder. So Dr. Kissinger turned around to him and he said, I'd be delighted to come, but, you know, Nancy would have to come with me. So this rabbi looked at him and he said, that's wonderful. I'll have somebody to sell the chametz to. Which was, I thought, a very wonderful raconteur, right? Wonderful response. But which leads us to the following question. Can you indeed sell the chametz to the wife, the non-Jewish wife of somebody who is Jewish? Or does it represent a halachic issue because of the concept of kol ma shekana isha kana baila? And Ramesh actually discusses this in Chelekei of Arachayim, and it's discussed by another Paiskim as well. So Rav Moshe in Simen Chaf of Chelekei says that he argues, so the Birchas Hashir, that's Rav Aryeh Leibtzin, says that there's a din of Masha Kansa Isha Kana Baila, and Rav Moshe disagrees. He says, since there's no Kiddushin Taifzin, there's no Masha Kana Isha Kana Baila, but since there's a din of Dina de Mahusa Dina, he says you cannot sell it, because indeed the husband would own a chelik of it and would have a din of chametz she'avar alav ha-pesach. And interestingly, the Shvus Yaakov, an achron who predated Rav Moshe hundreds of years ago, comes to the same conclusion, but for a different reason. He says there is going to be a din of mashakana isha kana baila, even though kedushin is not typhus, but he says some type of an ishas is still chal, and he says for the same reason, you cannot sell it. But who disagrees? The Marsham, the Bajana Rav, a great other Paisik, was asked the exact same question. It seems this was a very prevalent question in Europe. And he brings a brilliant, brilliant raya from the story with David. He says, it's a very complicated raya, you know, but if you want, you could look it up. It's a Marsham. It's in Chelik Beis. It's in Simen Gimel. It's in Chelik Beis in the Mafteach. He brings a great raya. It's a little bit lengthy for this program, but Marsham says you can sell it. So since Chametz Shavar Lav HaPesach is a Drabanan, if you had sold it, it would have a din of a Safik Drabanan Lakula, but you should not. It's a question whether you can sell it, whether you would be over of Chametz on Pesach, maybe you could be Samech on your Bittel. Question you should ask your Rav whether you can or can't do it in this case. Goes beyond the auspices of this program. Story is still a great anecdote. So, without further ado, let's go to our incredible roster of guests. You're listening to us on WMCA, or that's 570, or WMCA.com. Or you may be listening to us on the Nachum Segal Network. That's at NachumSegal.com. And we're also on Nachum Segal at 11 a.m. Monday mornings. We are also on WSNR 620 a.m. at 7 p.m. That's drive time, fabulous time, on Tuesday evening. We have the great honor of having with us on the phone from Brooklyn, New York, the Paisik of America, Hagoyen Harav Reb David Cohn. Welcome, Reb David.
I thank you for your encomium, but I'm afraid I don't meet it. So I hope to say things that are divrei emes, and it won't match up with the hakdama. So please correct it.
Okay. Let me ask the Rav a few shilas. It's before Pesach, and there are so many halachas. There's shiurim and achilas kizayis. There's shiurim and achilas maror. People before Pesach, they get sweating 2 weeks before. By the Seder, there are people gulping, and they eat it again and again, and they're checking the time. Did they eat it b'toich the zman, after the zman? Women get palpitations. Did they clean correctly? They're screaming in the house. The houses are pandemonium. Did they get the shear? Is there a crumb left here? Isn't there? It is so anxiety-provoking. It is so stress-provoking. It is so the opposite of Samachta Bechagecha. Could you give us some guidance as what do we do? How do we, as, you know, B'nai Torah, as Balabatim, as B'nai Yisrael, what is the halacha? What do we do before this Heilige Yom Tov that it's done, Kehalacha, etc., that when people who have anxiety about the halachas, how do we address it properly?
Let me say as follows. Firstly, I don't think that some anxiety, which is based on mitzvahs, has no value. I think that b'enei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the anxiety that a person has for mitzvahs, it depends, it has to be limited, but anxiety for mitzvahs, I think, is a positive thing. In fact, in the Pshutai Shel Mikra, in B'chukoi Sei Teilechu, Mitzvai Sei Tishmoiru V'asisa Maisam, so Rashi learns the Pshat B'chukai Sei Teilechu Ishetiyu Amelim B'Teira. But what is Shmiras Mitzvah and what is Asiyas Mitzvah? We know Asiyas Mitzvah is to do the Mitzvah. What's Shmiras Mitzvah? And Lani is that, I'm speaking now in Pshutei Shel Mikra, you find the concept of De'igei B'Mitzvahs in Chazal. Yidden are called De'igei B'Mitzvahs, which means anxiety because of a mitzvah. In other words, I didn't have a mincha yet. What time is the shkia? It's a normal anxiety. That anxiety, I believe, is shmiras ha-mitzvah. When I'll have a mincha, that's asiyas ha-mitzvah. So I don't want to belittle the concept of the igei b'mitzvah, which means stress. But it has to be a degree of stress that doesn't make a person sick. And they're unfortunately, and I know from top psychologists and psychiatrists that it's almost, we can call it the machla hadoyer, how many people are stressful to the extent that they need professional help. People with OCD, this, of course, mitzvahs are a tremendous outlet, but you can't say that even though the ege b'mitzvah stress has a positive value in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to be stressed where we need professional help to get out of the situation. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh used to say that the greatest madregas a person can acquire is through mikveh, even though he said it's not a mitzvah. He said that the simcha of a mitzvah is one of the greatest things. Actually, the Arizal says this. It's one of the greatest madregas, the simcha of a mitzvah. And on the other hand, he said that that even though the depression, he said, is the biggest atzvus, is a bigger aveira, and not aveira, a person can reach the sheol tachtas through depression more than he could doing an aveira. So we have to be careful with these things. Depression can lead a person to the end of his spiritual life. I'm not speaking about the physical life. We have to be very careful of that. And if as a result of mitzvah, a person is bringing a person to this kind of anxiety where it spreads, then this is something that we have to be very careful of. It can bring a person to, as we say, to the she'ol tachtis. So there's no doubt about this. We have to have a sense of priorities. And when we approach a mitzvah, especially like Pesach, as you explained, that Pesach comes with anxieties, we have to be careful to do everything in the proper priority.
So what is it? What is the sheer matzah? What is the sheer cleaning? What is the sheer mar?
Exactly. So that's why we have to become knowledgeable, la halacha. What is the sheer? We know that there's nothing in halacha that doesn't have a machlokas. So a person has to follow the psak of his mara d'asra. What is the psak? I want to be machmer. I'll go a step further. But first you have to know what the halacha is. Many years ago, I asked Rav Yisrael Zeif Gustman Zatzal, one of the Paiskei Hadar, who was in Rav Chaim Eiser's Beis Din when he was 21 years old. And I once asked him the following question. Why is it that a person, that there are Paiskim, G'dayli Yisrael, that say that mankind was twice as big, the chickens were twice as big in yesteryear, and therefore a kezias and a kebaya are twice as big as ours.
The Neid of Yehuda,
and some cipher seems to have been machmer that way too. So I said, I don't understand. We know through archaeological digs that the sheer mikveh, which the Gemara said was Amma al Amma, Bereim Gimel Amma, Psachim Kuftes, that we see from those mikvahs that men and women were much shorter than that. Amma al Amma, Bereim Gimel Amma, the mikvahs there were, the Masada digs all over, the mikvahs were smaller. So he said to me, you're right, period. If I'm right, you know, a few years ago, they had it on the front page of the Times that they found zeisim in Israel that were preserved, and they were much, much smaller than our present zeisim even. So I tell people who tell me, the doctor says I cannot eat matzah. It depends. Sometimes the doctor would say it's a sakana tzuma, and sometimes it could lead to severe illness. But I tell them, ask the doctor, think of a zayas, think of an olive, and think of a big olive. Could you handle one or two of those shiurim at night, of the night of Pesach? And if the doctor says yes, do it. The doctor says, cut it in half, eat one zayas, and it won't hurt you because it's such a small, minute amount, it won't hurt you. That's an example of the shiurim. If a person is fine with it and he wants to be machmir, tovay olav bracha. The same thing.
So you're saying the sheer zayas of matzah is a real olive, me'ikar hadin, and more than that is a chumrah.
More than that is a chumrah for sure.
Can I be mayiz to ask the Rav if the sheer zayas is a real olive, like in an olive jar, and more than that is a chumrah, don't we have a klal in halacha that on all mitzvahs asay that you don't have to do more than a chaimish, you don't have to give more than a fifth of your money to be mekayim a mitzvah, and it's known in halacha that aggravation and grief etc. is considered part of a chaimish. So if it's going to make you sick, that goes in a chaimish, and a chumrah certainly would not require more than a chaimish. Would the Rav agree with that?
100%, and it's not, it's a tshuva by Moshe Feinstein by the Chelkas Yoyev that a chayla shame by sakon is potter from mitzvahs because of this rationale. That a person who's a chayla shame by sakon is potter mi mitzvahs asay.
Right.
So, of course it's so. And if a person could get sick, aim by sakona, by eating. By eating more than a kezias of matzah, the person should be careful not to be machmer.
Minimum would be one. What would be it? Would be a.
The minimum would be a large olive, and as I mentioned, that they really the olives are much small. Were much smaller rather than twice as large, but our olives. Think of a large olive. That's the shear to be mekayim the mitzvah, and if a person has to minimize, that's all the person should eat leil Pesach. If the person can have a little more, then two seisim, one for the afikayman, but that's it.
And what is a woman cleaning Pesach who I'm sure the Rav gets a lot of calls about this, who make themselves literally sick, they go crazy.
No, it's wrong. It's wrong for a person to become this way, as you're describing, as a result of something which is clearly a chumrah. Let us not belittle it. It's Yerushalmi about washing the walls, and it has its value. And the perspiration of baking matzahs, the Mekubalim say, is a great mechaper in itself. It's a mechaper. I believe the Arizal says that. Of course, these things have values. But if the person is not properly balanced, it could lead to terrible things. A depression can lead to terrible things, or anxieties, or many things that they could lead to even addiction. The OCD people are suffering with this illness. So a person has to be careful. A person has to judge oneself and be careful that whatever is done with seichel. So the person who can handle the stress, it's wonderful if that person wants to be a doyeg b'mitzvahs. A person who can't handle the stress, it's like weightlifting. Some people get a rupture if they lift 50 pounds. Other people can lift 300 pounds. The same thing is in the world of emotions. There are people who simply cannot handle stress. It makes them sick. These people have to be careful. I give an example that our Mekaymus Hachinuch, so we teach our girls to daven, which is wonderful, but enough education as what is demanded of a woman davening is not given over, that the Yikar Chiyuv is Shmona Esrei. There is a whole to-do about Meya Brachas, if women are Mechuyiv, Birchas Hashacha, but whatever it is, there are women that because of the tremendous burden of being wives and mothers and sometimes having to, pardon the expression, bring home the bacon, are women who literally have no time to daven, and they don't do anything simply because they know they can't handle it. But why do they give up everything? Because they know they can't daven the way they davened when they were in school. Nobody told him that the Chafetz Chaim's Rebbetzin, Aleha Sholem, didn't daven. I guess she did the minimum. She was Mekayim, according to the Rambam, because of the burden that she carried. But if women would know, all I need is Birchas Hashach and Shmon Esra, and I'm Mekayim, even if you hold that there's a Chiyuv of davening Midrabanan on Shmon Esra, like the Rambam holds, but that's really enough. So a lot of these women wouldn't give up davening because they could handle the chiyuv for nashim even according to the Ramban. If they would only know the halacha, they wouldn't give it up altogether. So a lot of times this overwhelming wanting to do chumrah, where really halacha doesn't require it, brings to a minimization of asiyas hamitzvahs. And unfortunately, there are those that become sick as a result of the stress.
So what is the minimum of cleaning? What would be the cleaning equivalent of kezias, of an olive?
You mean the parallel of cleaning? That's very hard. What a woman has to know, la halacha, is that dirt is not chametz. Chametz is chametz. So it depends on the ability of a woman to hire help to clean, the ability of the woman, the physical koyach, and the koyach of her emotional koyach. She has to know, you have to see to it, no chametz. That's halacha. You have more time and you really want to clean everything in the house and make a great spring cleaning, l'chumra, fine. but the woman has to know I can handle it.
But what is chametz? In other words, is what?
Is chametz?
What is chametz like? And how hard do I have to look for chametz? And how many crumbs are considered chametz? And what dust is considered chametz? I mean, how many mashahus are considered? That Rizal says if you don't find misha, you know, a mashahu is like yechta kala shana kula. So yes. What is the shia chametz?
The shia chametz, again, we spoke about. If there's the shear, as far as Bal Yerah, Bal Yematz, and all those halachas have shiurim, as we have an halacha, we have shiurim. The din of mashu. So I hate to get into this detail, but the famous kasha was that somewhere in water, someone threw bread into water. And it could be who knows how many millions of gallons of water.
It's infinite.
Right. And you still have a mashu. So are you going to go tell me you can't drink water Pesach unless somehow you were able to strain water and or buy water beforehand? Nobody ever did that. Evidently. There is a sheer mashu also has to have some sort of a gedder of mashu, but something which is so infinitesimal, that's not mashu, evidently. But asking how much effort, I'm asked many a time this question, what do you do? What's called different, like we paskin shas hatchak. So I'm asked, what's called shas hadchak? Shas hadchak is measured by each individual. But there were questions that really can't be answered.
Well, my wife, if somebody says, my wife or I suffer from anxiety and we're cleaning the house for Pesach and I don't know what is the shir chametz I have to clean for, what would the Rav tell me?
No, they're not shir chametz.
What do I do
discern with your eye if you see a piece of chametz. A little piece, a half a piece of Cheerios, you see a piece of chametz with your eye. Everything you do in halacha has to be through the chushim. Halacha is based on the chushim.
So if I don't see, if I cannot see the piece of chametz, then
forget about it. There's nothing to worry about.
Okay.
And forget about it, of course. All halacha, kol haTorah kula, depends on a person's chushim. That's why, incidentally, if there are worms, so to speak, that you can see with the microscope, yeah. Those are not worms. The Aruch HaShulchan, a hefsek and a sefer Torah, kaskesis on a fish. Yeah. If you need a microscope, it's not kaskesis. If a hefsek can only be seen in the sefer Torah with a magnifying glass, it's not possible. Uchadoma. So in definition, halachically, it's somebody who with his five chushim cannot perceive this thing, then it's not chametz, it's nothing. So be blessed. Shalom.
We have with us from Elizabeth, New Jersey, a Rav in Elizabeth of Adas Yisrael, Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Schwartz, who's the Rav of Adas Yisrael in Elizabeth, together with Rabbi Teitz. He's also a psychologist. He has both hats. He's a musmach of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He's also a psychologist. He's an expert in anxieties disorders and OCD, which is very relevant given that Pesach is coming up. We have so many people who will go so, you know, basically they go nuts over, you know, shiurim and matzah, bugs on there. You know, maror, shear of kezias, etc. I'm cleaning, scraping the walls. Help us out with all this anxiety, all this OCD. Rabbi Schwartz, help Rabbi Schwartz. How can you help us with this? Welcome, Rabbi Schwartz.
First of all, good vach, and thank you so much for having me on, Rav David. It's a real honor and a privilege to be on your program. You're right. You described it beautifully. Very often, there are two different ways that people approach Pesach, or very often, just Yiddishkeit in general. They come in the door, they look at the mitzvah, and many of us look at the mitzvah and the halachos with a very wide open eye, with a beauty, with an appreciation for everything. And then there's a segment of the population that looks at it with a very, very heavy dose of fear. And that's really where the dividing line goes between a successful experience with mitzvos and an experience that's a little bit less based in Yiddishkeit and a little bit more based in a psychological anxiety that we call obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD.
So, as both a Rav and a professional, give us a brief workshop to the anxious, you know, balabas, yirei shamayim, housewife. Walk us through this. How do we avoid the anxious, stressful, unjoy-inducing erev yom tif and yom tif? And how do we come to the samachta bechagecha, ahavas hamitzvahs? How do we cross that line and come to a simchas yom tif as opposed to an anxiety-induced yom tif? As a professional, walk me through that.
A person who comes into yom tif with an understanding that my goal is to focus upon the idea of mitzvos Hashem, the idea of kichedvas Hashem hima uschem, the idea of simchas yom tif as an overwhelming goal, will use all the different responsibilities that come along with achieving that as steps in a higher process. And I think that's the first thing that we need to keep our eyes on. I think in a shiur that he gave many, many years ago, but it's very readily available in the world that we live in, Rav Scheinberg Zatzal actually spoke to the women in Yerushalayim about cleaning for Pesach. And he made it very clear in a beautiful piece about how important it is to, on the one hand, clean, but on the other hand, not go crazy. And there is a fundamental difference, and the difference is, where are we focusing? Are we focusing more on the avdus, or are we focusing more on the cheirus? And sometimes we lose that process. So in a nutshell, I think what we have to keep in mind is there's a purpose in what we're trying to do. And that purpose is guided by halacha, but not halacha that's made up, halacha that's handed down from generation to generation, that's interpreted by our rabbanim, our poskim, and that within that halachic responsibility are also halachic responsibilities to go in the realm of v'samachta, to make sure that there's a limit, there's a place, there's a start, and there's a finish, and there's a higher goal. And if people can keep their minds on that, then they'll be able to really separate from the crazy anxiety of pre-Pesach and sometimes the extremes that come along with it, and instead focus on achieving what they need to achieve in pre-Pesach, and also achieving a greater process.
Now, Rabbi Schwartz, what is the underlying cause of this anxiety of OCD? Is it Yerushalayim? I'm not a medical professional. If you could, and I know you could probably speak about this. It takes 6 years of training but if you had to give it over to a layman in kol ha'tayra kulal regel achas, what is the underlying, if assuming there is one or two?
So there, again, the beauty of this is that, if we would have had this conversation 20 years ago, we would be spending hours and hours discussing it. Baruch Hashem, we have a wonderful organization of mental health professionals, Nefesh, and we have wonderful people who are all over the country and now all over the world who've been studying this, who are B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah. So there's a study, there's a Harvard study of Judaism and mental health, which is run by a chaver of mine, a colleague, Dr. David Rosmarin. And he published a series of studies. One of the studies that he published, he really, I think, nailed it when he said very clearly that a person needs to understand that obsessive-compulsive disorder, or the OCD, the mamish, the OCD anxiety that you're talking about, has nothing to do with religion per se. The issue of OCD is a series of obsessions that are recurrent, unwanted thoughts that cause people to do repetitive behaviors. It's not the anxiety about the religion, or it's anxiety about halacha that's causing it. Another chaver in Yerushalayim, Dr. Jonathan Huppert, published a classic study in 2007, and he made it a point to teach therapists to understand that and make clear to their clients and patients that when you're dealing with an obsessive-compulsive disorder that seems to lie in a religious area, it's really not the religion that's causing it. If the person would not be concerned about the religion, he or she would be concerned about something else. OCD affects the individual in areas where the individuals care. It's like I always tell my patients, I get thoughts and you get thoughts. The difference between us is that you care about certain thoughts more than I do. You place an undue stress on them more than I do. And as a result, you get doubt, and you can't shake your doubt. My Torah, my halacha, tells me what I'm supposed to do when I have sphakis. You get so nervous and so overwhelmed by a suffix that you go out of bounds. And what we need to do is learn to put a place for suffix inside your practice of Yiddishkeit and learn where and how you're taking it further where it doesn't belong.
So basically you're saying, if I could be, you're saying that OCD is not religion-based. So if somebody is, let's say, a football fan and he's Catholic, he's going to be obsessed about a field goal, whereas a Jew just converts that into the matzah. And it is not a matzah-based suffix, it is an OCD-based suffix.
I would use a different example, but yes, that's how the term obsessed football fans have come into the game. I would be more, you know, it would be more akin to a person who would say one person is obsessed about, let's say, cleaning. A person turns around and says he's obsessed with not getting sick. So he or she goes out of the way to clean obsessively to make sure that he or she doesn't get sick. And somebody else turns around and says to himself or herself, I don't want the Ribbono Shel Olam to be angry at me. I can't handle the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam will get me, he'll punish me, etc. And that would be one of the major themes that would spark an OCD inside a person who's suffering with what we commonly term scrupulosity, or religious-based OCD.
And would it be too long for you to give like a 2-minute, and what is the root of that? Like, where does this come from?
That's a million-dollar question. I think that's one of the major issues in research today. From my perspective, it often comes from a misunderstanding, mistaken beliefs. That's the model I work from, where people walk around with a mistaken belief for whatever reason. It could be something that they heard and they only paid attention to half the shiur. It could be something that they developed within their minds. It could be, for whatever reason, it's irrelevant where it comes from. It's more relevant to me as a therapist to help the person understand you are thinking these errant thoughts, and as a result, it's causing you to have doubt, and as a result, you are scared, and as a result, you're going to extremes that aren't reasonable, and if it's religious-based, you're turning it into a religious halachic matter, and that's a problem, whether it's in davening, or it's in kashrus, or it's in karas hamishpach, or it's in Pesach and Pesach cleaning. Whatever it is, your goal is to be poshet all shilas of doubt. You want to get rid of any sort of concern, because what you're really going after is this major fear you have. And in most cases that I've worked with that are scrupulosity-based, they're often based in some variation of, I don't want the Ribbono Shel Olam to get angry at me, I don't want to be punished, I don't want to go to Gehenna, etc. We all don't want to go to Gehenna, but it's not the totality of why we do Torah and Mitzvahs. We all don't want to do the wrong thing, but it's not the totality of how we engage in what we do. And as a result, we are able to put it into a context and live in a more healthy environment and live within the boundaries of the halacha that also has room for sfeikos and tells us what we're supposed to do when we have a sfeik. And somebody who's so overwhelmed with that thought and that concern, so concerned about it, he or she will wind up rushing and running to try to do whatever he or she can to get out of the doubt. And sometimes they wind up distorting the halacha as a result.
So is it curable? Or is it more like alcoholism where you just have to sort of avoid it?
Baruch Hashem, I like to believe without a doubt that I've had some wonderful success. But the word cure is a very exciting word. To me, the definition of cure is that something is not working right now and something can work down the road. And if I learn certain steps, then I can make it work. A person who has OCD is a person whose life is disordered. Doesn't mean he or she will never have the thought again. If your goal is to never have an obsessional thought, then that's ridiculous. The person, every single one of us have obsessional thoughts. But when I think of a cure and success in treatment of OCD, what I want to do is make sure that a person is working with me or any one of these wonderful therapists that we have who really do spend a tremendous amount of time researching and understanding obsessive-compulsive disorder and working with the members of our community who may be suffering this way, what we want to do is help them understand where they're obsessing, what it's causing them to do, and help them understand and learn ways to live a completely normal life and place these thoughts in a context where they're able to say, that's an obsessive thought, I don't have to pay attention to that. What I need to do is pay attention to reality, halacha, halachic-based Judaism.
Okay, so now walk me through it. My name is Moshe, because I don't want to sound misogynistic. Where we live in the age of Trump, not that I want to get political here. And I have this kazayas in front of me, and I only have X number of minutes. And I don't want to get involved in Rabbi Chaim Noah, the Chazanish, etc. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has the amount of minutes. And if I don't finish it in X amount of time, I am not going to be able to my shir kazayas, which means I may have to eat as many, may eat it as many as 39 times my kazayas, which leads to another problem. If I could keep eating it till I go past chatzais, which means I'll never be yitzit, which means for sure I'm going to go to Gehenim. So what do I do now? I have this kazayas
so
in front
sitting
of
down,
me.
So think of it. You're thinking about this for the 2 weeks prior to the Seder.
Okay, so
and
walk
you're sitting
me through
down
this.
To the Seder, and you're sweating buckets.
Right.
And you recognize this at some point thereafter, decide you want help with this. And here's what we would do.
Right.
The first thing we want to do is help you understand what your concern is. And here's where the use of a tremendously effective Rav becomes very important in the treatment, because while you didn't want to get involved in the Rav Chaim Noah and the Chazanish and the time frames, etc., it's very likely the person in your example will be thinking about all those components. And so what he's going to do is come in the door, sit down, talk to you, and try to help you understand that what he's thinking about is that fear that he doesn't want to go to Gehenna. It's, after all, it's a mitzvah saseh, and how could he get into that situation? And, you know, he's going to look at me, he's going to say to me, look, you're just a psychologist. You know, how are you supposed to be able to determine matters of halacha? The first thing I want to point out is, we as therapists are very, very comfortable and should be recognizing our role as therapists. And therefore, we often will consult with, use, and sometimes directly in therapy, engage with Gedolei HaPoskim and Rabbanim. And I have to say, the Rabbanim, you know, cross the board in all the communities are really, for the most part, extremely, extremely helpful in helping their balabatim and the therapists be able to develop a certain understanding. This is the halacha, and we will set the parameter. What we will do with such an individual is he now has this understanding. His concern is Gehenim. His mitzvah is to eat this kazayas. This is the kazayas in the time frame his Rav told him. Then we will engage and practice, and we will put him through exposure treatment, whereby we get him to the chance to eat within this time frame and be able to handle the ability to do the best he can and live with the doubt that comes after. Often it won't just be in the kazayas of matzah. Often he'll have that issue with the eating of kazayas of matzah, and did he eat enough of a shir to bench on Shabbos? So what we'll do is we'll develop a hierarchy of his different fears surrounding this theme of Gehenim and where exactly it's affecting him in his Yiddishkeit, and step by step, we give him homework, and he's challenging himself daily and weekly to challenge his fears, but at the same time handle the doubt and to be able to go ahead, so that when he sits down at the upcoming Pesach Seder, he's already ready.
Now, Rabbi Schwartz, let me interrupt you. But on matzah, it's easy because it's an assay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on an assay, there's the halacha of ad chaymesh, and there's a person doesn't have to give up more than a fifth. So, which means you part of the fifth means you could take the easiest shear, because the stress goes into the fifth. There's you know, there's a history of psak that goes that way. Many, you know, Noida Biyahuda, Dagum Revavar, Moshe Feinstein, many psak, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say on a lav, it becomes much more problematic. So let's say eating mur, and or the question of a bug in the mur, on a lav, there's no heter of chaymesh, which means if, God forbid, there's a bug in my mur, then I really go to Gehenna, and there's no heter of the Dagum Revavar, all those things. And then there's no coolest. What are you going to do for me then? Oh my God, I could really, really, really go to Gehenna. I could be, there could be, you know, Treylov and Gimelov, it has six legs, Treysar, Marisa is, what do you do for me then? Oh my God.
Good, Good. Excellent question. So what we and much better opportunity.
I'm getting nervous on the phone now. I'm starting to sweat.
So first of all, the first thing we need to understand is we get better exposure opportunities. I get more chances with a lav than with an SA like matzah, because I can tell my client, my patient, okay, good. Now we're going to practice. First, we're going to find out, is he more comfortable if somebody else checks? Is that less anxiety producing or more anxiety producing? What if it's checked with in front of him, not in front of him? And we'll set a different series of steps, and then make him eat the salad. So I might take a client who has that fear, that bug fear, and I might come in with an expert, somebody who's an expert, and prepare lettuce with him.
If somebody else prepares it, then you're going to be Simich on what? That you could be Simich? So that's a din of ayinus?
It depends on the person's fear. Is his fear that he's afraid of his love, but he'll take it on you? And others, again, all this gets done in the initial assessment as I'm doing the work with him. You know, where are his fears? I'll break down his fears step by step in to try to figure out and develop a sense of more intense and less intense concerns. Does he never ever eat lettuce? What if I were to bring him a lettuce that was prepared by a Talmud Chacham who spends all day checking lettuce, who's a musmach of whatever hechsher? Would he works in that kashrus industry? Is that more or less stressful for him? All right. Then what if it's a rav, but not somebody who works within that industry? Then what if it's a layperson? Then what if he has to check it himself?
So you really drill down into the halachas to avoid where the fear becomes irrational, because you're saying, look, at this point you don't have what to worry about.
And then I make the person go out and test it each and every time. So he's going to be eating a lot of
lettuce. So if it was a woman who was checking, you would say, look, you're worried about Bal Yura, you're worried about Chametz and Pesach, you would actually explain to her the din of Bittel, you would walk through the halachic parameters and educate her.
We would start there, and then we would make her check different pieces of her home.
Well, Rabbi Schwartz, Rabbi Dr. Schwartz, thank you so much for these guidelines, and it was wonderful having you. We hope to have you again. And a Chag Kashuv
Sameach. A Chag Kashuv Sameach, and thank you for everything you do for us and for Klal Yisrael.
Thank you so much.
Kol Tov. Good vach.
We are speaking to Harav HaGoyin, Rabbi Usher Weiss, the Mechaba of the Minchas Usher, 12 volumes of it. He's also the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital in Yerushalayim, which is a very prestigious position. Rav Shlomo Zalman was Rav there, or the Tzitz Eliez was Rav there. He's also Av Bezdin and Aresh Kail. To ask the Rav, I know you wrote a tshuva about OCD in Halacha, and could you give us a little bit as the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital and somebody who has a big department that works with nervous disorders, a big area to work with psychology and other mental disorders, what is your been experience and what type of halachas have you had to paskin in this? And give us a little bit of your conclusions.
Regarding OCD, this is something that is very, very common and very prevalent in our society. And sometimes I am asked that people that are suffering from OCD and they have tremendous difficulty in davening properly. And by nature of this illness, it is compulsive, it is obsessive, and sometimes people are tormented in the way they daven or bench. So the tshuva you mentioned in Minchas Osher is one of the last tshuvas in the second volume of Minchas Osher, deals with the Talmud Chochem that feels that he can't even say Shem Hashem properly. And he spends many hours a day just trying to bench, to say Krishna, to daven. And the psak I gave him basically was that try to daven once, do your best, and never go over either a Shem or a Baruch or a Posek twice. Based on a very famous tshuva in Chasam Sofer, Or Chaim Simen Pei Gimel, the Chasam Sofer deals with the question whether a Jewish child, obviously with very limited mental potential, by halachic criteria, this child probably would never be a Bar Chiyuva. He would be defined as a Shaita. Whether he could be put into an institution in which he will eat Nevelis HaTzayfus. That was the situation in our society till some 20 or 30 years ago, until we suddenly became aware that we also have children with special needs. And Baruch Hashem, today, in every Jewish center and every Frum center, we have Moistas al Taharas HaKodesh to really take care of these children. But in the days of the Chasam Sofer, that was the only option. And the Chasam Sofer has a lengthy tshuva. We will not go through the entire tshuva. But an argument the Chasam Sofer makes is, if that is the way to bring this child back to normalcy and to move him forward and make him progress, then it should be muta. And the Chasam Sofer, I think it's a spark of genius, brings up an argument from the Gemara Misha Mahalach Bamidbar, and he doesn't know what day is Shabbos. He can't make him halacha only kedei chayav. But Chazal did not limit him in the area of tchumin. So he has to cover as much distance as possible. So why wasn't he limited regarding tchumin, just like he's limited regarding asiyas malacha? Especially if Yud Beis Mil is menatoyra. So the Chasam Sofer says, our goal is to get him out of the wilderness, to get him out of the midbar, to bring him back to Mukum Yishuv. And therefore, in this area, Chazal didn't limit him in any way. The Chasam Sofer argues in a similar way, this child is suffering from limited mental capacity. So it is our interest to bring him into the category to be a Bar Chiyuva, and enable him to be mekayim all the mitzvahs, and therefore that should override, even if it would be considered safina lebiyadayim. It is similar to the concept, not the same, but similar to the concept that we learn in Masechet Yomed of Pevav Chalol of Shavasachas Kadesh Yishmor Shabbos Hazav. And knowing that the treatment of OCD necessitates letting these people get out of their tension and their stress, even if he wouldn't be properly mekayim these mitzvahs, our psak would be, do the best you can and move on, because that is the only chance to help these people in their healing process and to enable them in the future to be mekayim the mitzvahs b'shleimus. My tshuva to the many young people that are tormented by OCD and they feel that they can't daven properly and they can't bench properly. So it is not only that my psak is do your best and move on because you need to get into a healing process. Far beyond that, I think when they do their best, they are mekayim mitzvahs tfilo. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tfilas kol peh. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu Shomea Tfilas Kol Peh, that includes people that cannot really pronounce the words as they should, they are included in Ki Atu Shomea Tfilas Kol Peh. And because of the unique status of these two mitzvahs, I think every other Yisrael could be mekayim these mitzvahs, and to have the privilege to be zeiche to what comes along with these mitzvahs.
There's some sofer to say, you only have to clean one time, you're not allowed to look back, and that's it, because we're going to be Saimach and Chasam Sofer, Chasitz is a Drabban, and it's almost impossible to figure a case where it would be a Daraisa. And basically, what's be Saimach and Chasam Sofer, because we want you to get better?
We definitely could say that, but once again, I assume that after one time, there is no Chasitz. I mean, the body of an OCD patient is no different than the body of any other person. And therefore, once is enough. But we need to find ways to calm these people and to try to ease them along the way to heal. And that is the way.
That the because the Chasam Sofer does equivocate a little bit about this heta, and a possibility is that we, you know, there's a tshuvas hamyuchesis l'Ramban that equates somebody with a psychological nervous disorder. He says that has a din of a chayla shiyesh by sakana. And I actually went online and I saw that the rate of suicide of OCD is between 5 and 50%, depending on which resource you believe, but a minimum of 5%. And 5% is a very high. Tatsala would come in a moment for somebody who said has a 5% chance of dying from a Vatal Shabbos. It's up to 1,000, according to most Paiskim. So if there's a chance of suicide, and even though it's not on this one event, but they mushroom, so would the possibility of saying it has a din of a chayla shesh by sakana be a siba to be matir, and say to an OCD person, you do it once, like the stipend used to say, do it once and don't look back, as another sniff to be matir?
I don't think we need to go to the extreme of chayla shesh by sakana to be matir. In most cases, we're dealing maximum with a bit limits to say. I'm also not familiar with the statistics. I doubt that those statistics are relevant to from people.
Well, thank you very much.
We have, from Scranton, Pennsylvania, a medical professional who has devoted his career substantially to the issue of those who are unable to control their impulses, Meshulam Epstein. Welcome, Meshulam. And we look forward to speaking to you on this topic. Thank you for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure. Great to be on your program.
So give us a little bit of insight. How do we deal those? How would you talk to somebody who is struggling with this phenomenon?
So the gold standard of treatment for OCD is called exposure and response prevention. And that basically means that the person is guided to expose themselves to whatever it is that they're afraid of, and in this case, it's fear of Gehenna, a fear of being over a halacha, and not doing what they would normally do in response to that fear. So it would be repeating something, doing it over again, or asking a lot of questions is also a compulsion. So so that is really what the gold standard of treatment for OCD is. I wanted to mention before we continue that Rev Scheinberg's guidelines for cleaning for Pesach are available online. And I think the actual shiur that he gave also is available online. You can just Google Rev Scheinberg cleaning for Pesach. So if people want to avail themselves of that, it's available. I'd like to say something that I think is critical in understanding this in as it relates to halacha. The people who suffer from OCD, the most painful element or the thing that keeps them doing their compulsions is their inability to tolerate uncertainty. Maybe this happened, maybe this is treif, maybe my tefillin are in the wrong place, maybe I made a nether, maybe I damaged somebody. And in my practice, probably over 95% of the OCD patients that I treat are people who suffer from halacha OCD. So we have to be very careful when we go to a Rav, because what happens is if they get reassurance from a Rav, we may be unwittingly feeding into their OCD by providing reassurance from a Rav. And what happens is every time now when they have a question, they're going to have to go to a Rav to get reassurance.
Is your point that you would go to the Rav to basically, for the really the more radical part of what you want, but basically the goal is to allow the therapist, the arbiter of most of the critical decisions?
Yeah, he can be, because we can look around and see what people do.
Because basically most of what he's concerned about really is things that are really very simple, and any logical therapist, these are the things that your average person struggles with, so he's very equipped to make most of these decisions. That's your
absolutely
point.
Anyone, it's just a regular life thing, and we know as therapists that most of these questions, most of them, not all, don't fall even into the realm
of what
of,
you would regularly require a Rav for. So you would really need a Rav for very, very few issues. And the therapist, if he's a Ben Taira, is really equipped to make the great majority of the decisions of what a regular OCD person would.
And
would
sometimes asking a Rav really could provide more certainty for the person, which is the worst thing for an OCD person. What we're trying to do is condition him through these behavioral exercises to accept more uncertainty.
Which is really the realm of most of us live in, is the world.
Exactly. That is part of my spiel. Exactly. I say, your reality is no different than anyone else's. You just unfortunately suffer from anxiety that constantly reminds you of that small chance of something going wrong. But the reality is, we all live in the same world, and everyone lives with uncertainty, whether it's halachic uncertainty, physical health uncertainty. You know, there's many, many decisions in life that we don't get to know how great they were. Sometimes we don't get to know until later in life, and sometimes we never get to know. So really, the critical issue is, and many of my clients have told me that that's what's made a difference for them, is that we really push the acceptance of uncertainty, which is ubiquitous. Everyone has to live with it. It's part of life. So uncertainty is a part of our halachic lives. There's no way to avoid it. And this is what we want our clients to learn, instead of their compulsions being a way of running away from uncertainty.
So living with uncertainty. Thank you very, very much. Well, that kind of wraps things up for tonight. Well, next week we have a fascinating program. We're going to be speaking about medicines, what needs a hechsher for Pesach, what doesn't. We have a fascinating group of Rabbanim. We have Rabbi Gershon Bess from Los Angeles and Rabbi David Haber. He's the machshir, the Rav of the Star K. And they're going to be speaking about what needs a hechsher, what doesn't. There are millions, so many thousands of pills and medicines. How do we know what to do? We will additionally be having Rabbi Menachem Genak, the president of the OU, the largest kashrus organization of the world. He's not going to be speaking about kashrus. He's going to be speaking about the upcoming elections. He's Bill Clinton's rabbi, very close. He's had a very long personal conversation with him this week. We're going to be speaking about the upcoming elections. And in particular, I want to ask him a very personal twist on it, and that is, there have been some new developments in the case of Reb Shlomo Mordechai Rabashkin, and if Hillary Clinton is successful, given her history of pardons, unlike the current administration, is there a chance that there may be a pardon in the case of Reb Shlomo Mordechai, given that his legal chances seem somewhat dismal? Is there maybe another angle in a Clinton administration? Let's hear the opinion of the person who has a 20-year relationship with the Clinton family, the closest person. Let's speak next week, hear this fascinating interview. You'll hear it straight from Rabbi Genak. A good vach to everybody. Looking forward to speaking to you next week. This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio.